Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, February 27th, Sunday, February 28th, and Monday, March 1st. We'll begin on page 1 of Saturday's paper. Our headline reads, Clinic reaches out with vaccine. Underserved people invited to Mount Pisgah. A place of trust. That was the role Mount Pisgah Baptist Church in Bloomington filled on Friday as lines of people filtered through its doors, hopeful and anticipant. Largely, they were older county residents of color, all of whom were there to receive their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Their presence was the culmination of efforts between the Bloomington Normal NAACP, McLean County Health Department, Western Avenue Community Center, and others. All of them had worked to bring the vaccine to residents in underserved populations, including those in Black and Brown communities, rural communities, and those aged 65 and over, in the first of what organizers say will be a continued effort to run similarly targeted clinics. For this first clinic Friday, it was important to have it here at Mount Pisgah, NAACP Bloomington Normal First Vice President Carla Campbell Jackson said. This is a place of trust. It is a place of relationships. People know us. They trust us. The fact that we have a presence on the west side of Bloomington Normal is just amazing, and it needed to happen, she said. NAACP President Linda Foster echoed the sentiment, saying that Mount Pisgah Baptist Church was in part chosen for its size, the symbolism of holding a vaccine clinic at the blackest, oldest church in the city, played a role in drawing black seniors to the clinic. It's a community church that provides all different organizations the opportunity to utilize this facility for the greater good, she said. Anything that you try to do that is good and is going to allow the community to engage and come together, this church is going to be there for that. The appointment-only clinic, which was organized via invitation, had 200 available doses, which MCHD spokeswoman Marianne Manco said would likely all be used by the end of the day. To land an appointment with an MCHD-affiliated clinic or a retail pharmacy, an online sign-up process is largely the only option, although the health department does have a call line for people without computers. Those options, however, don't have the ability to reach every county resident, some of whom don't have computers, aren't comfortable with technology, or don't have the time to dial the COVID-19 call center repeatedly. Access, whether via the internet, phone, or even transportation to a clinic, makes the difference in who is able to receive the vaccine. That's why organizers called landline numbers and worked their networks to tell people about the clinic through a word-of-mouth process. Leaders like Dr. Carla Campbell Jackson and all of our community leaders do a far better job of reaching into each one of those individual households, getting them here and getting them back home, MCHD's Manco said. We couldn't do it without partners like this. Organizers hope continued events like Friday's clinic reduce a startling disparity in who is receiving the vaccine in McLean County. Statistically speaking, we know that African Americans make up about 8 or 9% of the population, Campbell Jackson said. However, only 3.2% have been vaccinated. We want to make sure we do whatever we can to minimize the disparity there because it's a matter of life. Campbell Jackson said that for one woman, the significance of Friday's clinic moved her to tears before they both joked about being unable to hug each other because of social distancing. It was the start of what she and other organizers hope is a long-lasting trend in community health care. Today was monumental, Campbell Jackson said. Today is important. Hopefully, this is just the beginning of great things to come so that we do minimize disparities related to health care. also from page A1. The headline reads, Homes Going Up. COVID drove up costs, but construction continues. High consumer demand, coupled with supply problems, drove up the cost of construction supplies over the past year. But Bloomington Normal contractors say people are still building. We are as busy as we have ever been, said Jason Stevens, owner of Bloomington-based Stevens Homes. There were 61 newly constructed homes sold in McLean County in 2020, up from 12 in 2019. The increase comes even as the cost of building those homes has surged and other areas of the economy have seen challenges related to the pandemic. We had a 2,000-square-foot, two-story home that we are building, said Ed Neves, the owner of Expert Builders on Central Illinois in Bloomington. It was bid in late winter 2029, so early 2020. Then the pandemic hit. By the time we actually put a shovel in the dirt in late summer of 2020, the lumber package itself had gone up to $17,000. Other housing-related costs, such as cement, plumbing, electric, and roofing have also increased. Some of that is attributed to factory shutdowns and issues with trucking. When COVID-19 first hit, nobody knew what was going to happen, he said. The lumber mills and manufacturers thought everything was going to shut down, so they dumped their inventory as much as they could. Much of the inventory went overseas to Asia and Europe, he said. At the same time, tariffs in effect on Canadian lumber meant that product became more expensive. Neves described this situation as a perfect storm. Then demand went through the roof because the inventory of houses for sale is down 38 to 44% across the country, he added. The sale of homes went up 43%. Lumber prices have skyrocketed, more than 180% since last spring, and across the nation that increase has caused the price of an average new single-family home to increase by $24,386 since April 2020, according to the National Association of Home Builders. The organization said the price of framing lumber topped $975 per thousand board feet at mid-February. Compare that to last April, when the price was roughly $350 per thousand board feet. The price of lumber has gone up quite a bit in the past year, said Eric Weedman, manager at Alexander Lumber Supply in Leroy. We've been able to get lumber for our customers, but it's taken a little longer to get than normal because of issues with trucking, and obviously it's more expensive. Bob Brady of Keystone Homes said that he has had at least three recent customers seriously question the decision to go forward with building because of the higher costs. It's a supply-demand impact, he said. That coupled with the mills having issues, you had forest fires, heavy rains, cold weather. It's a domino effect, and prices have gone through the roof. Items like 2x4s have tripled in cost. James Baker of James Baker Builder in Bloomington said the price hike doesn't benefit anybody. It's not what we want as a builder or a consumer, he said. The prices on framing lumber and sheeting goods and things like that went up dramatically, and a whole lot of that is due to things that have to do with the COVID virus. As the pandemic began, businesses producing lumber expected major shutdowns and a market drop-off, he said. Instead, when people were at home, they saw all of the home projects they wanted to get done. The rising cost of lumber comes at an inopportune time, Neve said, because the interest rates have dropped to ridiculously low levels. So, because of the low inventory, people can't find the home they want, but they can build it, he said. And you can get all of the bells and whistles you can, get warranties, and you can have peace of mind of having a new house. It may be $20,000 to $40,000 more than a pre-owned house, but it is brand new and interest rates are 2.2%. I can't afford not to build a new house. Stevens of Stevens Home said he's seeing the same trend. I think with the low amount of inventory out there, there are still a lot of buyers, and with the mortgage rates being low, people are making moves, he said. We had to adjust our cost as things have increased. He thinks that the coming year will yield some relief in terms of material cost. I think that they're going to hold steady, or hopefully start to fall once the mills get caught back up. Weedman isn't so sure. Everything we're seeing, the prices continue to go up, but we are hoping they level off soon, he said. Brady isn't sure either. I don't know if it's going to get any better or not. Now here's something to keep in mind. Pantograph Media to host debates in mayor's races. Readers to submit questions for virtual events next month. Pantograph Media is holding one-hour forums featuring candidates for Normal and Bloomington mayor. These virtual events will be broadcast at pantograph.com and include questions from readers. The Normal mayor debate with Chris Coos and Mark Tiratilli is at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 23rd. The Bloomington mayoral debate with Jackie Gunderson, Mboka Imilabe, and Mike Strassa is at 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, March 31st. Candidates will discuss where they stand on a range of issues and community topics. The election is April 6th. More candidate forums are planned, said Central Illinois editor Chris Coates, who will serve as moderators. We were hopeful we would be able to have in-person forums, but that's not possible because of COVID-19, he said. This is a great way we can stay connected and voters can learn more about candidates on the ballot. To submit your question for consideration, email ccoates, spelled C-C-O-A-T-E-S, ccoates@pantograph.com, and include candidate debate in the subject line. From page A3, Hebert nets 20 years for 2019 murder. Man admitted role in fatal shooting at Orchard Road party. A Bloomington man pleaded guilty to murder Friday for his involvement in an April 2019 fatal shooting. Exodus Hebert, 20, was sentenced to 20 years in prison for first-degree murder charges in the death of Juan Nash, 25, who was shot at an outdoor party. April 2, 2019, in the 1200 block of Orchard Road in Bloomington. Hebert was arrested June 12, 2019, with co-defendant Amari McNabb, 22, of Bloomington. Nash drove away after being shot and was found unresponsive in a vehicle about two blocks from the scene of the shooting. Nathaniel Caldwell, 26, was wounded in the incident. Co-defendant Scotty Allen, 19, of Bloomington, who was also injured in the shooting, was found guilty for his role in the murder of Nash in a June jury trial. He was later sentenced to 50 years in prison. Hebert was originally scheduled to be tried with McNabb. McNabb's jury trial is scheduled for May 17th. At least 20 gunshots were fired in the incident, of which Nash shot 14, prosecutors said at Allen's trial. Hebert was a passenger in a getaway car, prosecutors said. At Allen's trial, the state prosecutor suggested the shooting was gang-related. It was offered that the shooting was a retaliation of the shooting deaths of Trevante Kirkwood, 27, who was shot and killed October 20, 2018, in Bloomington, and Stephen Alexander, Jr., 18, who was fatally shot June 10, 2018, also in Bloomington. Hammett Brown, 29, was found guilty earlier this week of shooting and killing Stephen Alexander and Tanisha Brown during an outdoor party in the 1200 block of Orchard Road in Bloomington. Plea is delayed in fatal Main Street shooting. A plea remains unclear for a Normal man accused of a January 30th murder outside a downtown Bloomington bar. Michael Bacana, 42, was charged with three counts of murder, one count of attempted murder, and two counts of aggravated battery and discharge of a firearm. He appeared in court on Friday for an arraignment, but he requested a French interpreter, as an attorney said Bacana speaks only a smattering of English. A continued arraignment is scheduled for March 19th, when a plea is expected to be entered. Bacana is accused of firing 8 gunshots, killing Mariah C. Petraca, 22, of Bloomington, and critically wounding another woman whose identity has not been released. He remained jailed on $2 million bond. He has Joseph Moran of the McLean County Public Defender's Office was assigned to represent Bacana, and Assistant State's Attorney John Shim was released as the lead prosecutor, or was assigned rather as the lead prosecutor of the case. The shooting occurred shortly before 1 a.m. January 30th, after an argument outside Daddy-O's bar in the 500 block of North Main Street, police said. Surveillance camera footage captured the shooting. The video footage shows the defendant exit the doorway of Daddy-O's bar, walk across the street, and then return to the sidewalk outside of Daddy-O's, prosecutors said shortly after the incident. The defendant is then seen getting into an argument with the victims on the sidewalk in front of the bar. The footage showed that during the argument, one of the victims shoved the defendant away from him. The defendant is observed to then remove a firearm from his waistband and shoot 8 times. Bacana then knelt to the ground and put his hands in the air, and civilians came to detain him until officers arrived, prosecutors said. The defendant was interviewed at Bloomington Police Department and during a recorded interview admitted to the shooting, prosecutors said. It was the first homicide and third shot fired incidents reported in Bloomington in 2021. The fourth report of shots fired this year was later that same day, as Bloomington police were called to the intersection of North Livingston and Forest Streets at about 6:50 p.m. Police said a victim's car and a nearby house were struck by gunfire, and no injuries were reported. No arrests have been made. Anyone with information as to the fourth shots fired incident should contact Detective Jesse Lamphere at 309-434-2369. From page A5, our headline reads, amid pandemic, State Farm made $3.7 billion in 2020. Despite fewer drivers on the road and lower rates, both spurred by the coronavirus pandemic, State Farm still pulled in a net income of $3.7 billion in 2020. The number is a 34% decrease from the $5.6 billion in 2019 generated by the Bloomington-based company, according to an annual financial statement. State Farm's net worth, however, rose by 6.8% from $116.2 billion in 2019 to $126.1 billion in 2020. The company, in a news release, said the rise was driven by gains in the stock market. The company's auto insurance business reported an underwriting gain of $3.5 billion, but also returned $1.9 billion in dividends to policyholders because less people were driving. For a second consecutive year, State Farm's property and casualty insurance companies recorded growth in auto policies and lower auto lines earned premiums. The latter is a result of State Farm reducing rates to match emptier highways and streets during the pandemic, the company said. We strive to help more people in more ways. In an unprecedented year like 2020, we focus on our core mission to help people manage the risks of everyday life, recover from the unexpected, and realize their dreams, Senior Vice President, Treasurer, and Chief Financial Officer John Farney said in the release. By lowering premiums an average of 11% nationally, the company said its mutual and other auto insurance affiliates saved clients $2.2 billion over a 6-month policy period. all parts of the company's property and casualty business saw a combined underwriting gain of $1.9 billion, up from a combined underwriting gain of $777 million in 2009. This year's underwriting gain, according to State Farm, reflects lower auto lines incurred claims offset by returns of value to customers in the form of lower premiums, along with an increase in homeowners' incurred claims. The boost in homeowners' incurred claims in 2020 were due to significant catastrophe activity across the country, the company said. The company's homeowners division had an underwriting loss of $1.6 billion. Its health insurance underwriting loss was $24 million, while its investment planning services lost $33 million. State Farm's life insurance division made $339 million last year, with a $994 billion in individual life insurance in place by the end of 2020. And from Sunday's paper, page A6, rural setting COVID widen region's teacher gap. 84% of districts in East Central Illinois report shortages. East Central Illinois school districts report having greater difficulty filling teacher positions than the statewide average, according to a new study. The COVID-19 pandemic has made matters worse as rural systems brace for lasting effects in the years to come. The Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools on Monday will release its 2020 Illinois Educator Shortage Study. It shows 77% of the 591 responding districts point to a teacher shortage problem. Seven regions were established for the survey, with 84% of East Central Illinois district respondents reporting having at least a minor teacher shortage. The region was above the state average, but in the middle of the seven areas surveyed. Still, despite this region being home to two of the state's top teacher producers, Illinois State University and Eastern Illinois University, more rural districts are finding it harder to fill new positions each year. Regional Superintendent Mark Jontry, whose office covers DeWitt, Livingston, Logan, and McLean counties, said COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated shortages in discipline like science, math, and special ed. Districts, he said, had some teachers that have probably chosen to retire a year or two earlier than they were going to because of the pandemic. The deficiency has limited some districts' programming, including those that are unable to expand their STEM offerings because they cannot find qualified candidates, Jontry said. That's where the real concern is, especially as we look to create more and more opportunities in the 21st century, he said. Those particular areas are crucial to having our students be well-educated and able to function in the 21st century economy. According to the survey of the East Central districts that responded, 49% said there were significantly fewer qualified applicants to fill open positions compared to previous years. In rural areas overall, 56% said there were significantly fewer qualified applicants. Everybody should just understand that we always seem to have positions that go unfilled in our region. And while we are relatively speaking better off than most, it continues to be a concern that we're going to be getting to a point where we're unable to offer some programs, said Jontry, a member of the committee the state regional superintendent group put together to address the teacher shortage. The teacher shortage crisis hasn't hit Bloomington District 87 as hard as other parts of the state, thanks in part to having the state's major producer of new teachers, Illinois State University. Still, Superintendent Barry Riley said, overall, there are few candidates across the board. The larger the pool, the better the chance to get the best candidate for the position. Riley said increased responsibilities heaped on teachers, along with criticism of educators, hurt recruitment. When you're under attack and there's a lot of negative attention, fewer people will go into it, said Riley. So much more has been put on a teacher's plate. It takes a toll on the profession. The other issues is finding substitutes for teachers, a problem going back at least 5 years, said Riley. The more we can get our retirees to do it, the better, he said, noting that retired teachers already know the schools and the students. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused some retirees to shy away from substituting out of concern from contracting the virus from in-person teaching or lack of familiarity with remote teaching. COVID-19 also has been blamed for contributing to early retirements. I definitely know of some examples of teachers who had not planned on retiring to do because of circumstances related to COVID, said Riley. Colleagues around the state are experiencing similar things. Because many of the subs are retirement age, whether they've retired from teaching or other fields, some are concerned about health risks associated with being exposed to so many people, Hayward Superintendent Lisa Taylor said. During the pandemic, the use of classroom supervisors was approved in Illinois, allowing for an adult who's not necessarily a teacher to watch over a class, often while the regular classroom teacher was teaching remotely while in quarantine or otherwise absent. Having classroom supervisors has definitely helped, and we're hopeful that the state of Illinois will allow something like that to remain in place for a short term, like for a few days, not for long-term subbing positions, Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Wilkie said. Of the districts that responded in an East Central Illinois region, 92% reported at least minor shortages of substitute teachers. The problem has worsened in the last 5 years. 85% of responding districts reported, and all but 3% of respondents said they expect the shortage of substitute teachers to worsen in the future. Widespread vaccinations may help districts recover more quickly from the substitute shortage. It goes beyond teachers. It also impacts your administrators, Riley said. The group for principals and other leaders is shrinking as well. Erica Hunt, co-director of ISU's Center for the Study of Educational Policy, said, "We can increase the number of our principal pipeline programs, but the number that actually go in and apply for those positions is still quite low. To get qualified people to apply to become principals and stay on the job, it is important to have robust mentoring and induction supports." The Center for the Study of Education Policy is working with 140 districts across Illinois, including rural districts, in a federal grant-funded project to develop more distributive leadership structures that ease some of the burdens on principals and gives teachers a greater voice, said Hunt. Having good administrators is important to addressing the teacher shortage, too, she said. We do know the data shows teachers come and stay in a school based on a leader. This has been Rita Schulte, and I've been reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph, from Saturday, February 27th, Sunday, February 28th, and Monday, May 1st. I will return with the second half hour in just a few moments, so please stand by.